Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
For a good reason, so don't be a hater. Welcome on a Wednesday, the 7th day of October, All Marine Radio. Welcome to the house of All Marine Radio.
Welcome to my house. Morning comes and you know that you want to stay.
Hey, somebody asked me a question and I don't know the answer to it. Are my podcasts on Spotify? Anybody know? Bueller? Anybody? Search. How about All Marine Radio? Podcast. I don't see it. Pirate Radio. I got to check it out. How do I get my podcast on Spotify? Anyway, I've been doing post-traumatic winning this morning. The second half of it with the midshipman from University of Arizona. And I have to tell you that, man. I have great experiences on a regular basis doing post-traumatic winning. And this COVID thing, yeah, that shit show screwed me up. Yeah. So I just infected the University of Arizona campus with post-traumatic winning. And so... So it's always interesting and fun's probably not the right word, fulfilling, and honestly, it's there are always experiences filled with joy, and because there's people sitting in there that get their lives changed, and then there's other people in there see it and understand it, and then they go change somebody else's life. And so it's this, you know, cool on top of cool on top of cool on top of cool experience. And so never gets old. It never gets old. And I'm addicted to it might be the wrong word. I'm not sure what the right word would be, but it is it's an intoxicating experience to show people the fourth path, you know, a path that's based in truth, a path that most people can go down and whatnot. So it ran a little long this morning. And so that's what I've been doing. That's where I was. So somebody sent me a text message and said something, some press conference for something's going on. So, but I don't rightly know because I've been paying attention to the news this morning. Are you going to the JIP DOJ presser, national security? I don't know. Six poultry industry officials indicted. That's probably not. Two British ISIS fighters accused in the torture and killing of Western hostages brought to the United States face criminal charges. So none of that. JIP, what is that? I don't know. At the DOJ presser, national security. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on. The so we'll be with you for an hour today, and then back to normal tomorrow when the Mensa brothers join me. So anyway, so good morning to you. Welcome to Almarin Radio. The hey Mac, it's really interesting because you can hear your excitement / intensity in your voice when you get done doing it and hop on the air. It's been kind of interesting because it sounds like you go from one straight to the other, and so it seems like you're fairly fresh from doing it, and it shows in your voice. That's exactly the case. That's exactly the case. And the, yeah, I walk out of my garage through the kitchen, down the hallway and into here, and I flip the switch and start doing this. So yeah, that is the case. And I have to tell you that my studio in my garage, it's awesome. There's a few things I have to work out. I don't understand how my camera consumes electricity yet. And I worked on it last night, but it recorded, or I'm not even recording either. So it's plugged in, but I don't know. I don't know what happened. So I've got to mess with it again today. So, but for at least about half the thing, it worked. And the studio is awesome, and I'm learning how to do things like lighting and stuff like that. And which is you know, when at first, oh, lighting, it's. But think about it: how do you get light on something and not light on something else? Well, right, you see those lights that they have on movie sets, on TV sets, and they have like flaps on them, right? Yeah, those lights. So that's so you can block light. So for instance, in my studio, there's wooden beams, and light will reflect off the wooden beams. There's pictures. Light reflects off pictures. So you got to find a way to light the subject, which would be me, and the set without the light hitting those other things. How do you do that? Well, you block the light. Well, wait a minute. If you block the light, then exactly. So you block the light, and then you have a second light source behind what you block with to do what you want without casting the glare. So I've even found that interesting, right? And I shouldn't say this, but I will. I mean, the other thing that you have to do is, yeah, so you're looking at yourself and you're like, wait a minute, why is my head so shiny? It's like, hey, you got to put on some kind of, you know, makeup that gets used for television just to take the shine off your head and your face. I'm like, oh, so I tell Colleen, So I start watching videos yesterday about makeup for men. And the first, I only watched one. And I it was done by this dude, right? He's got a beard. He goes, you know, so I start my YouTube channel and he's telling me, all, he's not telling me, but in the video, he says, and my wife says, hey, look, you got to wear something to take the shine off your head. And he said, my immediate reaction was, I'm not wearing makeup. And she says, okay, call it what you want, but you need to take something that takes the shine off your head. He said, so he guys kind of goes through, okay, so let me just tell you the basics of what you should do. And I did that. So I told Colleen, hey, you got to go to the store and buy this. And she starts laughing. She goes, oh my God. So then Catherine was over last night. And she got them, and they're like, this is hilarious. But they liked it. Catherine's a theater person, so she enjoys it. And anyway. But I mean, even and so, but you the difference between walking in front of a camera with it and then without it is fairly substantial. It looks better. So but that whole creative process is something that I've enjoyed. But I'll tell you this. This morning, so post-traumatic winning happens in two pieces, right? It happens with the first part is my story, kind of the background of the environment that we live in today, and then the three goals and 10 commandments. The second half is how does this apply to you as a leader? And then also, how do you get to this winning part? And that's the most fun part of it, right? Is because you've talked about these things that are true, and you say, okay, here's what you're going to do with them. And so, you know, there's midshipmen that are there, and I want to say the 100 and I don't know how many, between 100 and 200, got up at 5. You know, it started at 5:30 this morning. Yeah, motivated. I told him, no wonder I wasn't in NROTC, man. I was sleeping. And so, but it was good. And so, and then, you know, we did, what kept me was we did a question and answer period. And some had to go to class and stuff. Others just hung out. And so, and asked questions. Questions. You know, sir, do you think that these phrases, you know, is it normal? You know, you talked about anger. You know, I think it's pretty normal. It's pretty interesting to hear you say that anger is a normal thing. You know, I've gone to therapy and, you know, it's something that the therapists that I've seen are trying to help me get rid of. I said, well, yeah, you know, you try to mitigate it as best you can because you can't be rolling around being a crazy ass, you know, angry person. But my point to you is that it's normal, okay? And while you're probably going to learn how to channel it, it's not something that's going to go away, you know? Maybe it will. Maybe it will subside. But the people I know that struggle with anger, it tends not to go away. And there's just know that. And then there's things you got to do to deal with it. Don't act on it. And you know you're not supposed to, but... So, other questions about boilerplate sayings like time heals all wounds, has a purpose in this. You know, I think the email said something like, I hear these things and they just make me so angry. You know, do these statements fall into this category? And I said, yes, 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 yes. Don't say those things. And what happens is people tend to say those things when they don't know what else to say. So rather than just walking up and giving you a hug and squeezing you, and say, hey, look, I'll be here for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if you don't call me and I find out you're struggling, I'm going to come over here, right? I'm gonna rip your garden up, okay? I'm going to raise hell over here. Now, you say that, not that you would do that, but you say that to make them laugh, to be normal. And then you say, hey, you know, I mean that, though. I don't sleep well. I always joke about one of the things that I like about having friends that don't sleep well either, you could text them in the middle of the night and they'll text you back. Why are you awake? Why am I awake? Because everybody's awake at this hour, aren't they? I just happen to be. Yeah. And I said, look, it's 50-50 with my friends. You know, whether you'll get a response. But don't say those things. They're hurtful, especially when you're on the receiving end of it and you're in this horrible place and somebody tells you that there's a purpose in this. Oh, really, motherfucker? What's the purpose? Can you explain it to me? Why did that happen? Right. And so, anyway, so then those kind of questions, you know, and then how when you show up to a unit, how would you do this? Right. How would you implement these tools? Do you sit down? Do you start interviewing people? And so we talked about that. I said, well, me, what I would do is that the first conversation I have, I'm not interviewing anybody. I'm just introducing myself. But I'm going to tell them, hey, here's the path we're going to go down. I got to get to know you. Okay. And here's what I want. Here's what I, and at that meeting, I might give them the forms. I want you to fill this out. I want you to be prepared to talk about this. And I might do that as a group. And then I said, and then every time you clean weapons, every time you PT, every time you go someplace for a class, every time you go, you know, you go with them. And as you're milling about before, you see these people and you start talking about it, about their, you know, hey, man, how was your fishing trip? Oh, sir, blah, 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 blah. And they tell you about their fucking fishing trip. That's all part of getting to know them, right? And you get to know them so you can help them in your lives, in their lives. And then once you help them in their lives, then you have access to them. And as a leader, you can influence their life. And that's what people, I mean, hopefully that's what you're a leader for, is you're a leader to help and to make things better. And the way you do that is you help the people that work for you. So it's, I mean, it's a, you know, people call it servant leadership. I, you know, if that's not what leadership is, then what is leadership? What's another kind? So if it's not servant leadership where others come before you, then what exactly are you practicing? What is that? That's the whole rank has its privilege shit. Yeah. I tell that story about standing in the USS Ranger in line to go into the ship store. And I stood in line for half hour. And then one sailor looks and says, hey, sir, do you know you have head of the line privileges? And I'm not exactly sure the way he phrased it, because he was in coveralls, dirty as shit, right? And we had been at sea forever. And so, you know, I'm sure he thought I was an idiot. Like, why is this clown standing in line? So he turns and says to me in front of other people, hey, sir, you have head of the line privileges. And I'm standing there, first lieutenant, motivator, first lieutenant, executive officer, Marine Detachment, USS Ranger. And I said, I know. And now all these heads turn. And I had their attention. Well, why aren't you using them? Well, you have to understand that the Marine Corps is a little bit different. And so now more of them look. They're like, well, what do you mean? How is the Marine Corps different? Well, look, if I'm on duty and there's a reason for me to go to the head of the line, then I would do that. But that reason would be, and you would have the same privileges if you're on duty as a Marine, as an enlisted Marine. If you're on duty and you can't, and the chow hall's not open and you need to eat, then you come here and you go straight in. You don't stand in line and wait for shit. And they look at me and they're like, wait a minute. And so so it's really interesting. We had this interesting conversation in the chow hall in line to go into the ship store of the Ranger. And this is no bullshit. As we're standing there, the chief's mess was like 10 feet away. So you have these chiefs, and I don't want to bag on Navy chiefs, but and this is in the late 80s, right? Probably 87, 88, right there. when I'm aboard the Ranger. So we're having this conversation in this line that's waiting to go in. And and these Chiefs would walk out of the Chief mess, and they're overweight and in their khakis, right? And they've got a toothpick in their mouth walking out of the Chiefs mess. And they kind of look around, hands in their pockets. And then they walk straight into the ship store. This is after we've had the conversation. And now these young sailors are standing in line. They just look at me and they're like, shake their fucking head. And I'm standing there laughing. I'm like, yeah. And so they look at me and like, so if that was a Marine, I said, staff NCO mess, yes. And they weren't on duty, they would go get in the back of the line? I said, yep. That's the way we do it. And I told them, like, so we're in the desert and we're eating, right? And we're lucky enough to get hot chow, it comes out. Officers, staff, and COs go to the end of the line. And like, whoa, why is it the Navy like that? I said, I don't know, man. The Navy's different. Navy had rank, R-H-I-P, that's the first place I ever heard it. Navy. Rank has its privileges. And I can vividly remember the chief engineer, and he was a prick too, prior enlisted Navy guy. And we're at 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock's run, our meeting's run by the executive officer. I think his name was Don McClendon. But anyway, he lived in Cardiff. You know, spent most of his career around San Diego. He's now XO of the Ranger. And I think I wound up giving him a ride to work a couple times when his car broke or some shit like that, because I lived in Oceanside. And so going down to Coronado, I'd, you know, pick up Cap McClendon and ride to work with him. So he hosted the meeting. So one day the chief engineer, he's pissed. He goes, I got a bitch. And you're like, whoa. The Chang, as he's known, right? The chief engineer. And so he said, you know, why am I getting my laundry back and it's not folded? And I'm sitting there thinking, shit, man, I just have to get all my shit back. Right? I gave 6 t-shirts. Hopefully I'll get 6 back, at least 5. All right. 12 socks. Hopefully I'll get 10 of them back. So you're listening to, and you're just shaking your head going, holy shit. And he went into this thing like, hey, you know, the Navy that I grew up in, the Navy that I've lived in, you know, this is how we do it, right? This is bullshit. He was pissed. He was pissed because they weren't folding his laundry anymore. So anyway, different, different. But the whole idea of what leadership is, leadership, I mean, to me, and his perspective was he had worked, you know, and come up from being a seaman. And now he was a commander in the Navy, and he expected, you know, the privileges that went with that rank. And I just remember thinking, I don't see in the Marine Corps we don't buy it like that. You know, as you ascend in rank, you have more greater obligations. It's not like dun da da da, so and so is here now. I mean, the Marine leaders I know that are leaders aren't like that. So that's why I asked the question. So if you're not leading like that, then what are you doing? Right? You're there for the sword arch? You're there for the birthday ball? Please, go away with that shit. Right? I mean, those are good times and all that, but come on. That's not why you're there. You're there to lead. You're there to make a difference in people's lives. So anyway. So the question and answer thing was, so at like 8:50, it's like, so Mac, can we do question and answers now? I mean, I'm like, sure. I'm looking at my watch going, oh shit. Gonna be late today. So anyway, so don't take it personally. Here's a Napa-Wisconsin man. I was watching videos of Makeup for Men, a new low point for All Marine Radio. Really? We're going to go there? that I'm honest and I'm trying to make a difference in the world and you're going to bag on me? See, these are the kind of people that try to hold other people back in life because they hate their own lives. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Self-hate projected onto somebody else. That's what that's all about. Yeah, I know I'm not supposed to talk about it, that if you want to make a good video, you probably shouldn't have this shine all over your face, and you should probably, like, put something on. What is it that people put on? I don't know, but I can learn about it. The wonders of YouTube. So that's what I did, and now I'm being ridiculed. I'm being ridiculed for wanting to make a contribution to the country. Mm-hmm. It's called haters, man. Hate, what's that line? Haters gonna hate? Yeah. Yeah. So, come on. I've been dealing that with my whole life. That's right. So, not going to worry about it. But Colleen's headed back to the mall to go take some of it back and get the right stuff. So, yeah. So, anyway. So, I'm trying to think. What else happened interesting on that call? Nothing. It's just interesting. One of the messages that I got during the presentation was, and it was a private message. You know, you can put something in there for the group, and then something a private message that only one person could see. Thank you. I've been struggling with trauma in my life, and sitting here the last 2 days has made an incredible difference in the way I look at myself and the way I look at the future of my life. And I just want to say thank you. I mean, it's the typical fare of post-traumatic winning. But, I mean, how could that ever get old, right? How in God's name could that ever get old? And so, and it doesn't. So a wonderful morning. So, good morning to you on this Wednesday. I have no idea what's going on in the world. I watched baseball most of yesterday. Yankees lost. But, you know what? I didn't really care. It was... you know, this format where everybody plays back to back to back to back to back, game after game after game, I wish baseball could find a way to do this. They never would. I mean, but not so many travel days and off days play. Right? So now these divisional games, like last week it was wild card games, 3 games in a row, boom, 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 all in the same stadium. No travel days. This week, neutral site. Game after game after game after game. 5 games. And so it goes. So pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff. And it's all in good weather stadiums. So they were playing in San Diego last night. They were playing in Los Angeles last night down in Texas. So so good stuff. Good stuff. And honestly, exciting week for me personally. The thing with the University of Arizona was fantastic. And Colonel Norton, Kevin Norton, he's been listening to Allman Radio for a few years. But I think that it's different. All of a sudden he's seeing those that he leads on a daily basis impacted in a profound way. And so he's excited this morning too. And then I was, after the whole thing wrapped up, I was talking to his XO, a captain. And he was saying, "Hey, sir, I've already got these incredible messages. It's already going. So congratulations." I said, "No, man. Yeah." I said, "Look, don't fuck it up, okay? You got an opportunity here for your young people to be, you know, that are leaders at the University of Arizona, to make a dent in the university community. And then you guys need to sponsor me, the university having me." In a much broader context, and you can change the suicide numbers at the University of Arizona. The Tucson police chief was on, or somebody on his staff was on, and he sent in a message saying, "Holy shit, this has been awesome. We have to find a way to do this. You're going to hear from us." So, so it's all cool stuff. So anyway, good morning to you. My apologies for being late. The United States Marine Corps band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. And this is dedicated to the midshipmen from the University of Arizona and everybody that was on that thing for the last couple of days. I appreciate their patience, and not only their patience, but the opportunity to present these incredible concepts about what it is to change somebody's life and to show them a path that certainly exists and how important that is to people that are struggling, and that you can show them that path. You can take them there. You can be their guide. And you can watch the profound impact in their lives. So my thanks to Colonel Kevin Norton, who's the MOI over at the University of Arizona, the home of the Wildcats. And I look forward to doing I also told him, I said, hey, man, I want to have a conversation with you guys about the Navy and the Marine Corps that you're going to join. Because both those organizations need your help. You know, talked about the Bonhomme Richard, talking about ships colliding, talking about, another aviation incident, and all gets painted with the same brush. And that brush is a lack of operational competence. And so I told him, I said, I want to have a conversation about that. I want to come back. And so so we'll see. We shall see. So, but this is dedicated to them. I, if you can't tell, had a pretty good time doing it. So, God bless. Thank you.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
I love that. You know, I joined the Marine Corps to be a winner. Yeah, that's, I mean, no shit. And you want to know what part of the Great Santini that I remember most vividly? Is, I think they're moving. And they're in a station wagon. And they're singing. I think his wife's from the South. And she wants to sing Dixie. And he says, no, I don't sing loser songs. He wants to sing the Battle Hymn of the Republic. It's a winner song, not a loser song. Yeah. I mean, that's, for whatever reason, made me laugh. I've never forgot about that. Right? Never forgotten that. That the that he doesn't want to sing a loser song, so he doesn't want to sing Dixie. Anyway, time for us to check the weather here. I'm not sure where the weather went. So let me find it. Currently, in Quantico, partly sunny and 76 right now. Down the coast, Camp Lejeune, partly sunny and 80. 29 Palms, sunny and 80. Southern California is supposed to cool off, thank God. Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton, partly sunny and 67. Camp Smith in Hawaii, clear, odd for Hawaii. Dark and 74. In Okinawa, raining, dark and 77. If we go down to the southern hemisphere in Darwin on the northern coast of Australia, it is dark, cloudy and 76. And I'm sorry, dark, raining and 76. And in Oslo in Norway, it is raining and 52 degrees. That is a look at your weather. We're going to take a break. Come back. We'll check news headlines for today as All Marine Radio continues on a Wednesday. So don't touch that dial. More of this fine program coming up next.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back. And that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform, so stand by us now.
Like my brother did, and he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did, when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country. And thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis. But sometimes reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
We all share a common journey. We wanted to serve our country, stand for something bigger than ourselves, and protect the things we love. Although we were ready to face any mission, help those in need, and make a difference, for some of us, coming home was more of a challenge than we expected. In the service, we had each other's backs. But as veterans, it can sometimes feel like we're all alone, even when surrounded by our loved ones.
If you're a veteran or service member in crisis, or know one who is, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I read a really interesting article yesterday. I don't talk much about race and critical race theory on this program, but looking for the article. Give me 1 second. This is, let's see. It's entitled, Where Have All the Liberals Gone? No, that's not it. Hold on. There's an interesting editorial about Illinois taxes at a crossroads. Illinois has a flat tax. And it, talks about they want to go to a graduated rate income tax, which means that Illinois is almost bankrupt as a state, and they're bankrupt because the Democrats run the state. They're a lot like California, although California and New Jersey, same. New York getting there, but the there's this alliance between Democratic unions, public unions, and the Democratic Party in the state, and they have huge majorities, and the pension funds are bankrupting the state, but you can't do anything about them, right? You can't do anything about them. And so you see slowly but surely them being – their attempts to rescue them are – you know, you simply can't do it, right? You simply cannot do it. You can't rescue them. And so it's I can't find the article I want to talk about. Is it this? Where have all the liberals gone? That's October 4th. This had to do with returning the Nobel Prize. And it was awarded to the New York Times for their work with the now it's irritating me. And it's essentially return the Nobel Prize. Nobel Prize, the 1619 Project. And it was essentially And it essentially calls out the New York Times because the primary assertion of the 1619 Project is now being denied by the people who put it out there. And so what the article says is that what happened after the president, you know, went after them publicly was that on the down low, without any explanation, they edited the website and they took off some of the more inflammatory claims to one of the claims they took off was the whole premise of the Nobel Prize. But I can't find the article that I wrote. And so, you know, it occurred to me how did the New York Times get there? I just found it. By a guy named Stanley Kurtz. An open letter today, released today, and signed by 21 scholars and public writers, calls on Pulitzer Prize Board to the Nobel Prize. What a dope. To rescind the prize for commentary awarded to Nicole Hannah-Jones for her lead essay in the 1619 Project. The letter is posted at the website of the National Association of Scholars here. I am one of the signatories. So this woman has been like the proponent of the 1619 Project. Okay. Now, but again, this article written by an academic. 21 scholars and public writers call on the Pulitzer Prize Board to rescind the prize for commentary awarded to Nicole Hannah-Jones. The letter revisits a sorry tale of the 1619 Project errors and distortion and invokes these in calling for the revocation of the prize. The recent revelations that the New York Times stealthily edited out the signature claim of the project that the advent of slavery in the year 1619 constitutes our country's true founding were, however, the immediate occasion for this letter. As Philip Magnus, another signatory, has shown, Nicole Hannah-Jones has several times denied ever claiming that 1619 was our true founding, although, in fact, she's made this latter claim repeatedly. The actions on the part of both the New York Times and Hannah-Jones are profoundly irresponsible and disturbing. How can we explain them? Now, what's interesting about this is this is in the wake of George Floyd, this is being shoved down the nation's throat. And I would tell you, you know, yesterday there was a dust up between Mark Cuban and Senator Ted Cruz from Texas. Cruz made a comment that, I mean, unbelievably, the NBA finals in this area, in this era where we're all staying at home, is not being watched, is the least watched NBA finals in recorded history, according to what I read yesterday. Cruz made a comment. You're trying to shove down the throats of people who want to watch your political commentary, and people are sick of it. And I believe that to be absolutely true. And let me tell you, there's no other way to explain why people aren't watching it. I mean, you have the marquee player of the NBA, LeBron James, playing in it. The Lakers, one of the marquee franchises in it. Why are ratings down 45%? Good question. Well, I think Ted Cruz calls it out. So what's happened in the aftermath of George Floyd is this shoving down the throats of American, this theory, right, that used to be way out there. But now, thanks to organizations like the New York Times, it's now being consistently brought into the culture. And the president just put an end to it. You know, being federally funded. And I want you to listen. Now, again, mind you, that this is written by academics. And then you have to, the head scratcher is, how did the New York Times get into this business? And you're going to hear the argument, you're going to hear him talk about this whole, the 1619 project and what bullshit it is. But anyway, how did the New York Times, the quote unquote gray lady of the newspaper business, this bellwether, right? This beacon of journalism. How did they get into this business? How did they get into the business of saying that Ted Cruz was not worthy of their op-ed page when Vladimir Putin is, when Nicolai Maduro is? I mean, what the fuck, honestly? How could you be? So is their hatred of Donald Trump such that they would subordinate any other professional responsibility they have to the agenda of, you know, the progressive liberal part of the Democratic Party? And you can see why the climate in the country is what it is when newspapers become advocates and teachers become advocates. There is no respect for the First Amendment anymore because, you know, articulate, measured discourse isn't what we believe in anymore. It's activism and change, and I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not going to sit here and accommodate other points of view. I mean, that's where we are. That's where we are as a nation. And it's brought to you by your institutions of higher learning. So hopefully one of the byproducts of this COVID thing is that they will take a haircut and a body shampoo like nobody's business. And we will have a chance to go ahead and recast what education in our nation is and clean out that pipe. Anyway, so let me continue on with the column. These actions on the part of both the Times and Hannah Jones are profoundly irresponsible and disturbing. How can we explain them? Jonah Goldberg has suggested that the Times may have undertaken its stealth edits. So, stealth edits, what are they? The president calls out, you know, the 1619 project, and he ridicules it, and quite rightly he should have, right? But he is Donald Trump, right? And so what would you expect of a industry leader? We've undertaken a review of the website, and we will have comments to make when we come to some decision on it. Would you expect them to do that? Or would you expect what any smart 14-year-old would do, which is on the down low, go edit the website without comment and act like nothing happened? Nothing to see here. What? So what would you expect of an industry leader? Oh, you would expect them, because they're shitbag news people, to go ahead and change it on the down low and never say a word. As Jonas Goldberg suggested, that the Times may have undertaken the stealth edits, quote, out of the partisan desire to deny Donald Trump and his fans a talking point, close quote. There is some evidence in support of this suggestion, as Wilfred McClay, another signator, notes in his commentary magazine. Leaked transcripts of internal meetings at the New York Times suggest that the 1619 project may have been part of a strategy designed to help elect a Democratic president by highlighting America's allegedly endemic racism. Not long after President Trump effectively made American history a campaign issue in his Mount Rushmore address in July, Hannah Jones began to deny that she or the 1619 Project had ever asserted that the year 1619 was America's true founding, citing the stealthily edited text of the project as evidence. And then in parentheses, see especially the exchange between her and Ben Shapiro here. Now, let me see if that's a video. Hold on. I'm going to it. Let me see. Hold on. I don't see it. Anyway, he goes on. The Hannah Jones interview on CNN that helped kick off the controversy over the stealth edits took place the day after President Trump attacked the 1619 Project in his address to the White House Conference on American History. This suggests that Hannah Jones was willing to jettison the most notable claim of her project, even to the extent of denying that she ever made it, once that claim began to seem like a campaign liability. When, however, were the stealth edits of the 1619 Project's text actually made? Philip Magnus, and then see, these are all academics, so they know this shit, right? Philip Magnus suggests that at least some of the stealth edits may have been made as early as December 2019, at a moment when the 1619 Project was coming under withering criticism from scholars. Not from politicians, but from scholars. That alone may or may not suffice to explain the stealth edits. It is notable, however, that Hannah Jones continued to claim that 1619 was America's true founding until shortly after the claim became an issue in the presidential campaign. Moreover, while there is some evidence that stealth edits may have been made as early as December of 2019, we do not know for a fact exactly how many edits were made, when they were made, or why they were made. This itself continues to be the most serious sort of journalistic responsibility. Wait, journalistic responsibility in the New York Times. What am I not understanding about that? Imagine that a Pulitzer Prize for Literature had been awarded to a novel for which it later emerged that the most famous passage had been plagiarized. At that point, the prize would rightly be revoked. Now imagine the Pulitzer Prize for Literature has been awarded to a novel whose author, after receiving the prize, surreptitiously edits out the most famous passage from the e-book and denied repeatedly that the passage had ever been in the novel to begin with. In that case, a prize would not be revoked, but the author would be considered to have gone at least semi-mad. How rich is that, right? In a very academic way. What do we say then about a Pulitzer Prize for Journalism where the publisher edits out the most famous passage slash claim and the author repeatedly denies that the claim had ever been there to begin with? And then in parentheses, although she herself made the claim repeatedly in a variety of public contexts well after the publication of the original text. Close parenthetical. What do we say when the author points to the stealthily edited text as proof that the claim edited out was never actually made to begin with, despite the fact that she herself repeatedly made the claim for months on end? If the most talked about claim of the 1619 Project, a claim cited in the prize itself, can simply be disowned, and then the fact of disowning it lied about, it could not ever have been meant to begin with. It was laid down in bad faith. Ruh-roh. At least some significant part of the motivation for these deceptions and prevarications appears to be political. And if we cannot investigate this in greater detail, that is because the Times has hidden its own post-publication editorial actions, the height of journalistic responsibility. So, I mean, what has happened to the New York Times? I mean, how can you sit there and do this shit and say the shit they said about Tom Cotton, that his editorial, his op-ed did not meet their standards? Bullshit, man. And that this is the game we play in this country on a daily basis. It's clown shit, bro. To my mind, this is the most, and again, this is not a partisan, this is an academic. To my mind, this is the moral equivalent of discovering a plagiarized passage in a novel after a prize has been awarded. It's one thing to know that the 1619 Project had a partisan political aspect. That would not, by itself, invalidate the prize so long as the claim being made was serious and seriously meant for substantive reasons. But to casually make a gigantic claim, a claim cited in the prize itself, then simply to toss it away and cover up the fact of having done so, turns a core reason for the prize into a joke. By striking the most famous claim of the 1619 Project, and then covering up the act, the Times and Hannah Jones have retroactively exposed their effort as a bad faith project. In an important sense, they have delegitimized the central claim for which they received the prize to begin with, just as surely as they would have done by surreptitiously stealing that passage from another author. In short, the Pulitzer Prize Board should revoke its award to Nicole Hannah Jones. So what I found most interesting is that, I mean, first of all, what happened to the New York Times and all of this? I mean, the New York Times has been shoving this down the nation's throat. Now, I think this is the passage, and because it comes from CNN, I'm not even going to play it because it'll piss me off. Yeah, I almost did, but I thought better of it. So you wonder like how we get into this position where that this country is a racist country. The country that elected a black president twice. Huh. You look around the country, right? And you look at the number of police chiefs that are black and female. The one in Seattle, and you're like, okay, what am I missing here? Are there idiots among us that are racist? Yes. Is the nation a racist nation? No, it's not. And you have this bullshit being shoved down everybody's throat. I mean, honestly, it's amazing. And then you look at an organization like the New York Times. What the hell is going on there? All right, it's to say head scratching is like not even close to being true. It's that everything is subordinate to your political ideology. And that's the stuff of third world countries. And so let me tell you to me what poses a, should I say, existential threat? I don't know, existential. Possibly. With a diminishing middle class and a university system in the nation that has ceased to be the place where ideas are discussed and has become a place where ideologies are embraced and advocated for, the nation is rolling the dice with its future. Because we all know the state of leadership in the country. All you got to do is look at the city of Minneapolis. Clown-like, rudderless fools who are not up to the challenges that are in front of them. You've seen it in Seattle. You've seen it in Portland. You know, all these cities, I think, run by Democrats, democratically controlled states, yada, yada, yada. Not up for it. And now you have a university system that is more about advocating, right, than articulate discourse. You have newspapers like the New York Times who think about those guys, and they're academic dudes, right? Their claim. It's shoddy history. It's not fact-based. Embraced by universities around the country, though. Why? Because it fits the narrative. Embraced by the New York Times and given legs by the New York Times. Why? Because it fits the narrative. Doesn't have to be true. It just it has to line up with what we believe and espouse on social media. Yeah, that's all it is. Fact? What are you? Come on. Like, what are you, an idiot? Who says it has to be fact-based? That's so old-fashioned. That's so, you know, that's so white. That's so Karen-like. Yeah, all that bullshit. So anyway. All right, let me do a few stories, and then I'm done for the day. Army suspends requirement. This is awesome. Of passing new fitness tests for initial entrance training graduations. Uh-oh. New soldiers and recruits will not have to pass a fitness test to graduate from the Army's enlisted officer or warrant officer initial entrance training programs for at least the rest of fiscal year. Uh-oh, too many people failing. Too many people can't do it. Ruh-roh. Next story. All Americans abroad can use military post offices to mail ballots. Years after they fought in Afghanistan, U.S. troops watched their children deployed to the same war. 141 million construction project planned as at an army base in Germany. Why? We're leaving. We can come back in unit. Top stories in the Wall Street Journal. Email. Mac, are you interested in the vice presidential debate? Could I be less interested? No, I'm not. Next, Wall Street Journal. Trump pushes for some COVID-19 relief after halting stimulus talks. Another email. Mac, do you think Biden will get elected? I don't know. I mean, if you recall the Hillary Clinton thing, right? If you recall that, the election. In spite of Trump's, all his craziness, right? She could not increase her lead. So I think it was interesting then that he tracked within plus or minus the statistical probability in the poll, in most polls, you know, plus or minus 3%. So that means, in my opinion, they're even. So after that, I remember thinking, given all his craziness, she can't shake him. Like, what does that mean? Because she should be, like, ahead of him. So to me, the question is, will there be Republicans who vote for Biden? Yes. How many will there be? I don't know. But the true question is, who turns out to vote? So it depends on what barometers you look at. If you look at gun sales, right, through the roof. You can't buy guns or ammunition in the country. What does that tell you about people? Right? So I don't know. Let me tell you what's more important than Joe Biden being elected. What's more important is who controls the Senate. But again, nobody can take the country and turn left or right with it, right? It just doesn't happen. The whole system is designed to force compromise and move to the middle. Ohio, man. I thought it was about the clicks. Yeah, you're right. I'm being Pollyanna right now. I thought it was I thought it was I thought you were supposed to have some, at least some integrity. Am I being foolish again? There's a story in the Wall Street Journal, how Russia today skirts high-tech blockade to reach U.S. readers. The Kremlin-backed outlet has been boosted by a news aggregator dominated by conservative media sites. On any given day over the past 2 years, visitors to the homepage of Real Clear Politics were likely to see its famous average of political polls, a roundup of news, and center-right commentary, and near the bottom, a link or two to stories from RT.com, which is Russia Today. The provenance of the RT headlines was obscured. Readers didn't immediately know they were clicking on headlines from a Russian state-backed publication that American intelligence officials considered the Kremlin's principal international propaganda outlet. What's interesting about news articles these days is that I don't know if somebody actually reads them or they have artificial intelligence. Here's the Wall Street Journal.
How Russia Today skirts high-tech blockade to reach U.S. readers. The Kremlin.
That's not a machine, I don't think. That's a human being. But one never quite knows. So that's in the news. From USNI News. Oop, that's the early bird. My bad. The destroyer USS Pinckney pulls into San Diego after an extended deployment. Secretary of Defense Esper calls for a 500-ship fleet by 2045. With three SSNs a year and light carriers supplementing CVNs. Whoa. How about that? Light carriers. What is that? The Jeep carrier. Two joint chiefs, two senior leaders in quarantine after meetings with COVID-19 positive U.S. Coast Guard commandant. So that's General Thomas, assistant commandant of the Marine Corps. Who else? You have the CNO. You have, I know that guy, I can't remember his name. You have General Brown from the Air Force. You have the chairman. You have the vice chairman. And you have the chief of staff of the Army. Everybody in quarantine. Congratulations. But Secretary of Defense Mark Esper announced a new future fleet plan for the Navy that would grow the attack submarine force, supplement nuclear-powered aircraft carriers with light carriers to achieve greater day-to-day presence, and invest heavily in small and unmanned ships for distributed operations. How about that? Five hundo. We can't even get to it. Oh, my God. Is he okay? Esper also called for refueling a total of seven Los Angeles-class nuclear submarines compared to five or six the Navy had previously discussed, and invest heavy in the SSN-X future submarine program. Next, Esper stated that nuclear-powered aircraft carriers would remain the most visible deterrence on the seas, but he said a new future air wing would have to be developed to increase their range and lethality, and that light carriers would have to supplement the Nimitz and Ford-class supercarriers to help achieve greater day-to-day presence while preserving limited nuclear carrier readiness, which has been strained recently by overuse and backups at maintenance yards. Up to six light carriers, possibly based on the America-class amphibious assault ship design would operate both instead of and alongside the CVN. Whoa. Third, Esper called for between 140 and 240 unmanned and optionally manned ships on the surface and under the sea. What happens when somebody boards your unmanned ship? They just take it over. And just steal all your shit. How about that? Fourth, he called for 60 to 70 smaller combatants, such as new frigate class, under contract now, to increase capacity and free up larger ships for more complex missions. Fifth, Esper said strategic sea lift and logistics would be pivotal for distributed maritime operations with 70 to 90 combat logistics ships required, though he noted that further work would need to be done in this area. Sixth, Esper, man. Did he get high or something? Does he not understand money? Sixth, the Navy would need unmanned aircraft launching off carrier decks to cover all the missions of today's air wing. Fighters, refueling, early warning, and electronic attack. He alluded to this recently while speaking to sailors aboard the Carl Vinson. Lastly, he pledged, no mention of the Marines yet. Lastly, he pledged his support for the Marines Force Design 2030 effort and the new classes of ships and connectors needed to accomplish this, though he added that more work was needed in this area. All right, what does that mean? Quote, the Marine Corps is currently in the process of implementing its force structure plan, and I support the Commandant's vision to recalibrate to great power competition. As such, we see a need for more amphibious warfare ships than previously planned, in the 50 to 60 range, but more work needs to be done in this area as well. Has anybody talked about money? In a show of good faith, Esper praised Navy Secretary Kenneth Brathwaite for finding significant funds in the budget to help refocus to shipbuilding. Brathwaite told USNI News in an interview this past summer that he planned to go beyond his predecessor's plan to find $40 billion over 5 years and wanted to find even more to overhaul the fleet. Esper said that, as a result of this work, he felt comfortable giving the Navy a bigger piece of the budget pie to help achieve Reagan-era levels of shipbuilding and spending. Beyond the fiscal challenges, Esper noted two other challenges to the Navy's ability to make use of the fleet it has today and to find room in the budget to grow. Over-demand for naval forces from the combatant commanders and backlogs of maintenance work at public and private shipyards. So let me tell you, you should read that article. That's Esper. Be all you can be. Holy shit, man. And Navy. 500 ship Navy. Holy moly. A year and a half after this shit started, senators want answers on delayed rights for military housing tenants. This is a joke. Lawmakers are pushing Secretary of Defense Mark Esper for answers on the status of key protections for tenants of military housing. In June, defense officials said 14 of the 18 rights in the Tenant Bill of Rights had been implemented in privatized housing communities. Right? Now, hold on. Get the rim shot ready. This is rich. Let me stand by with the rim shot. Okay. Everything's ready. The four key remaining provisions are a process for dispute resolution. So, like, if you do the least significant ones and you leave the four primary ones, what did you do besides nothing? Nothing. A system to provide tenants with the housing unit's maintenance history. Why can't I see what you've done to this piece of shit? Because if you did, you wouldn't move in? Exactly. Clown shit, man. Clown question, bro. That is Bryce Harper when he got asked if he went drinking in Canada. I think when he was 20. Next, a system to provide tenants. Wait, a standard forms and documents. Can't do that. Can't do it. Too hard. Including a standard lease agreement across the privatized housing project. The Tenant Bill of Rights was required by law in the National Defense Authorization Act of Fiscal 2020 as part of comprehensive reform provisions to address pervasive issues with mold, rodents, and other health and safety and environmental hazards in privatized military housing. So then it goes on to document that. I mean, you're still dealing with this bullshit. It's amazing. And we're going to hear the same people say the same tired shit. What the transformation of the Marine Corps can learn from Israel. I'm not sure. And that's it on Marine Corps Times. And then we'll get out of here today. Lastly, in terms of the early bird, number one, top military leadership quarantines after the Coast Guard Vice Commandant tests positive for COVID-19. Nice. Nice, 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 nice. Next, with DOD's fleet of 2045, the U.S. military's chief signals he's all in on sea power. Yeah, Navy. What's up? We're going to throw all kinds of money at the Navy. They need to unscrew themselves then. White House event for families of deceased U.S. troops thrust into new light after Admiral's coronavirus diagnosis. Washington Post. Did they not think that Gold Star was appropriate after families of deceased U.S. troops? Well, most people won't know what a Gold Star family is. Oh, good call. By our boy Dan Lamoth and Missy Ryan. I don't know Missy, but I read her stuff. The White House handling of an event for the family members of deceased U.S. troops was thrust into new light on Tuesday amid disclosures that a Coast Guard admiral who attended had tested positive. What? So why would the event be called into question because somebody showed up tested positive? I'm not exactly sure. But it only matters, right, that you're an advocate and that you don't need to report accuracy or anything like that. Number five, thousands of U.S. troops have come home from Iraq. The U.S. military has completed its drawdown from 5,200 to fewer than 3,000 troops in Iraq, according to a spokesman. How about that? Number five, U.S. sees important progress in Helsinki nuclear arms talk. You think? Because let me tell you, Russia needs an arms agreement because they can't compete economically. So in order to keep their economy afloat, they can't be diverting huge amounts of money into a nuclear program in a race against the United States. And I think that's as much as I could take today. So somewhere along the line in our country, what happened was, you know, people that had not been people that had not been partisans, places you weren't supposed to find partisans, embraced partisanship. That's what happened in our, that's what happened in our country. So, you know, universities were supposed to be places you learned and had debates and stuff like that. And TV, I mean, was it just a pretense that, you know, we report news? I guess possibly. Is that just a pretense? Just a load of bullshit? I guess. Relative to me musing about being Pollyanna and believing that, you know, there's certain functions that, like, the press ought to fulfill. And they shouldn't just be straight up, you know, cash whores. So relative to that question, Ohio man, not Pollyanna-ish. You're finally seeing the light. Oh, really? Finally. No, what's surprising me is here you have an industry leader, right? Here you have an industry leader that has gone down this road, you know, to peddle this 1619 thing that tries to convince Americans. Now, let me tell you, the United States of America, in my opinion, based on my world travels, the least racist nation that I've ever been around. Now, maybe there are in others. And again, if you believe that this is a racist nation, I'm going to tell you that you're fucking clueless. Right? Live through the 60s. I sound like a really old person there. Live through the 60s. And when the N-word was used as a noun, it wasn't a racial slur, it was a noun. And now we've elected a black guy twice? The fastest growing demographic category in the census is mixed race couples? Mixed race families? Fastest growing category. And we're a racist nation. Give me a fucking break, man. Systemic racism. It's just like, and so the New York Times embraces this and this leading beacon of journalism. I mean, it's just shit. It's just shit. And so again, I look because, okay, what changes us? And see, one of the things that attracted me to the article I read you was, and again, the National Review is certainly a right-leaning organization, okay? But it starts with an open letter released today signed by 21 scholars and public writers, calls on the Pulitzer Prize Board to rescind the prize for commentary awarded to Nicole Hannah-Jones for her lead essay in the 1619 Project. The letter is posted on the National Association of Scholars. So I just clicked on it. National Association of Scholars. Reports and projects, our work, members, academic questions, get involved about us. Let's click on about us. The National Association of Scholars is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that seeks to reform higher education. We uphold the standards of a liberal arts education that fosters intellectual freedom, searches for the truth, and promotes virtuous citizenship. To accomplish this mission, we defend the academic freedom of faculty members, students, and others through individual advocacy, investigative issues affecting academic freedom, the integrity, purpose, and neutrality of the university, and publish our findings as in-depth reports, educate the public about the policies and legislation that would preserve the liberal arts and protect academic freedom. These create three pillars from which our work stands: individual advocacy, research reports, and public advocacy. Our mission. The National Association of Scholars upholds the standards of a liberal arts education that fosters intellectual freedom, search for the truth, and promotes vigorous citizenship. I'm sorry, virtuous citizenship. The standards of a liberal arts education that the NAS holds include reasoned scholarship and civil debate in America's colleges and universities, and individual we expect colleges to offer coherent curricula and programs of studies. We uphold a view of institutional integrity that includes financial probity. What does probity mean? I don't know. Search the web for the word probity. The quality of having strong moral principles, honesty, and decency. Got it. As well as transparency in the curriculum and the classroom. We uphold the principles of academic freedom, and that includes faculty members and students' freedom to pursue academic research, their freedom to question and to think for themselves, and their freedom from ideological imposition. Ooh, yeah. How about that? Anyway, here's some more headlines. Pulitzer Board must revoke Nicole Hannah-Jones' prize. Let's see, is that the only one? The fact that they put their names on this is pretty amazing in this day and age. And the other thought I had was that, you know what, maybe it's academics that will actually save us, saying that this tyranny, right, this tyranny of the cancel culture will not end well in this country. So, anyway. Yeah, that's why that stuff got my attention. So, that'll do it here on a Wednesday. So we'll take a short break. It'll be about a minute or two, and that way I can save this and put it back on. So have a great day. Again, my thanks to the Wildcats at the University of Arizona for hosting Post-Traumatic Winning. I hope it is the first NROTC unit in the country that does so, and that we could slowly infect. So here's my plan. So here's how we get post-traumatic winning to the campus. The NROTC or the ROTC. Does the Air Force have ROTC? They must. They do. U.S. Air Force ROTC. Yeah. So get it on campus that way. That's the same. How about in high schools? The play. Because I'll never get it through the PhD maniacs in all those school districts. But the arts people, they want to help. Yeah. So anyway. That's the plan. So, question is, who turns out to vote? Do all the people that went and bought guns turn out to vote? Do all the young people finally show up and vote in numbers? And it turns out, I mean, if you look at voter turnout, voter turnout in presidential election. All right, voter turnout Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, 55.5%. Barack Obama v. John McCain. Wasn't that who ran in 2012? McCain? 54.9%. 2008, 57%. 2004, Bush, somebody, 55.7%, so pretty much the same, down from 2008. But the year 2000, 50%. 1996, 49%. 1992, 55%. So 55%, will that number go up? So anyway, have a great day. Don't be afraid to change somebody's life. Don't be afraid to do good things. On a Wednesday, Al Marine Radio, out.